Continuing with chapter 11 of First Canto, we're reading this morning texts 36 and 37. I already read the translation of 36. It's still the continuing topic is Krishna and the relationship with his queens. He's entering Dwarka. And there's a very special relationship with the queens. It's a conjugal relation. And mundane attraction in this world rides principally on this male-female attraction. It's what makes the world go round. It's what, you know, species after generation of all the species continue because of this. And it's one of the chief obstacles for those who are on spiritual path to overcome. And one of the best ways to overcome it is to understand what's the subject matter here. The position of Krishna is that he's not subject to that attraction. Although he's in the midst of what appears to be, you know, up to his ears in such attraction, or the objects of such attraction. That is to say, our attachment to Krishna with a proper conception of who Krishna really is and who we really are on the spiritual platform will free us, release us from that bondage. So, First Canto is giving us that verse after verse after verse. There's many verses in a row on this subject, so we should take it that it's very important that we understand this subject if we want to go further on the path of spiritual life beyond, you know, the religious part of what we're doing. You know, we're dutifully doing some things. We rise early, take a bath, attend Mangalar. You know, we do a bunch of things, some nice behaviors, and it's good. It's strengthening, it enriches our spiritual lives. But to go beyond the religious aspect into the transcendental realm, once again, by entering into that transcendental realm, the struggle that we have with our mind and senses will be crossed over. Doesn't Krishna teach that in Bhagavad Gita? What's the verse where Krishna teaches that in Bhagavad Gita? Daivihi eshu gunamayi. Mam eva ye prapadyante, mayam etam tarantite. Daivihi eshu gunamayi. You don't know the verse? Any other children know the verse? Daivihi eshu gunamayi, mama maya duratya. The verse is saying, there's a very, the living entity is struggling very hard. Duratyaya. Dur. Very hard struggle. Struggle. Hard struggle with this material energy. The second half, those who surrender unto Krishna can easily cross beyond it. Struggle over. Struggle, or cross beyond it. Which do you want? Hey, I want to go beyond it. I don't want to struggle. Well, the price is surrender to Krishna. Oh, I don't know if I want to pay the price. So choose. pay the price, or struggle. Well, it's a struggle to surrender to Krishna. Okay, better to place your energy struggling to surrender to Krishna than struggling with the, you're sure you're going to lose, Devi Maya. Beat up. Again and again. Lifetime after lifetime, not just like. So, next time I'm going to win. Fool's paradise. So, this is surrender to Krishna in a very attractive feature where we're getting some impetus to understand how wonderful Krishna is. Therefore, we should surrender to Him, not just because I don't get beat up and punched around by the material energy. But Krishna's, He's our real shelter. So how Vyas is describing this is to help us understand, although Krishna is in this intimate situation with so many wives, He's not moved by that intimacy. The verse says that the queens have the capacity to bewilder the mind of Lord Shiva, to completely overwhelm to the point of dropping his bow and stunned by Cupid, he who charms every living entity. But Krishna is not affected. The unspoken reference with regard to Cupid, who knows the Leela? When Indra did the Indra one more time, Indra was thinking, Naranarayan Rishi, their austerities are too much. Maybe they'll be thinking they should take over my position as King of Heaven. He's always thinking he's got this problem. Kind of inferiority complex kind of things. Thinking people are always after his position. So he sent Cupid himself, Kamadev, along with the most select, beautiful ladies of the heavenly realm to the place where Naranarayan Rishi was performing his austerities. And the instruction was, zap him. Fire one of your Cupid arrows, and so he'll fall down, and there are all these nice ladies here, you know, he'll lose it. You know this story? So then, on the order of the King of Heaven, Kamadev came. And when he got before Naranarayan Rishi, what happened? First, what happened? What did Cupid do? What did he do? He was embarrassed. I'm ashamed. I've come here for this diabolical purpose of Indra. You know, he's the king and I'm the subject, he could understand. You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I've had this not only mission impossible, but it's offensive. Please forgive me. Then? Can't remember. Then Narayan, with Nara standing in the background, Narayan smiled. Very gently smiled. And from his transcendental form, he manifested unlimited numbers of goddesses of fortune whose beauty millions of times surpassed the beauty of the most beautiful women of the heavenly realm. And he said, if you like, you may marry one of them. He dropped his bow. So that's the reference here. These goddesses of fortune, because the queens of Krishna are the goddesses of fortune, they have the capacity to completely overwhelm and disarm even Cupid himself. And Mohini Murti is the other reference, Lord Shiva. Although he's glorified on the one hand, that he, when Parvati, because why was she called Parvati? Huh? Yeah, so and the word for mountain is Parvat. So she was Parvati or Himavati after her Sati. After she burnt herself to a crisp in protest of her connection with Daksha, because Daksha had offended Lord Shiva. So she was then born as the daughter of the Himalayas. So Parvati was sent by the demigods in order to induce Lord Shiva to produce a son, so that the son, who would later be born as Kartikeya, would be able to help the demigods defeat the demons. But she was unable to disturb, even in his naked state, Lord Shiva. So he's glorified for his being so transcendentally undisturbed. But seeing the form of Mohini, he was captivated. So the goddess of fortune, the goddess of fortune is not exactly the same as Mohini Murti, because Mohini Murti is one of the forms of Krishna. But the goddesses of fortune, they have the same capacity. So who can resist such attraction? Krishna. 16,000. He's fully transcendental. And we've already heard they're fully transcendental too. Not just that for many, many thousands of lifetimes they underwent austerities. So like, you know, they're stoic. But they're not just stoics. Stoic means they have, you know, very strong resistance to sense pulling and pushing. They're not just sense controlled in that sense by mechanical means. But there's not a trace of material attraction within them. Prabhupada writes in the purport, No, it's coming up later. So he in the purport, he's addressing one of the classic questions. So my dear devotees, listen carefully to the classic question, because I guarantee in the course of your lifetime you'll be asked this classic question by someone. Sometimes a challenging someone, but sometimes maybe a sincere someone. Here's how Prabhupada writes the classic question. It's one of the stump the Swami questions. Here it is. the path of salvation or going back to Godhead always forbids the association of women. And the complete Sanatana Dharma or Varnashram Dharma scheme forbids or restricts association with women. How then can one be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is addicted to more than 16,000 wives? This question may be relevantly raised by inquisitive persons really anxious to know about the transcendental nature of the Lord. Now, he hasn't mentioned there are persons that don't care at all about understanding the transcendental nature of the Lord, and they're just materialists who are offensive. But supposing you find someone that's sincere, and they want to understand this, how would you explain it? Even if they're rascal offenders, you should know what the response is, if you even don't offer it to them because they're just rascals. But if they're sincere, then you also should have the proper answer. To answer such questions, the sages of Naimisharanya have discussed the transcendental character of the Lord, and in this and in the following verses. So first, the attractive feminine features, which can conquer Cupid and even the supermost tolerant Lord Shiva, could not conquer the senses of the Lord. So then he explains, in this world, that's the program. You know, male-female attraction, she's looking for him, he's looking for her, and, you know, they spend their time doing that. And then there's at least in human society, marriage. In the animal society, no marriage. But then the consummation of combining of man and woman. So then the hard knot is made more tight. As a result of this, both males and females' attraction for sweet home, motherland, bodily offspring, society and friendship, and accumulation of wealth becomes the illusory field of activities. And thus, but indefatigable attraction for temporary material existence, which is full of miseries, is manifest. It's not a good program. But all embodied beings feel that pull, or urging, that push. And so, going back to the question, that the Sanatana Dharma recommends you control that urge. But this looks like a person that's not controlled. Look at this. Like, you know, King Chitraketu. He had more than 16,000 queens. And, you know, his program was, I want a son. But in Krishna's case, what was the reason that he married 16,000 queens? It's not their feminine attraction. And when he was in their company, it was not their feminine attraction. And lusty urges, thus the combination. What was the attraction? The attraction was their love and their devotion for him. Krishna's Atmaram. The living entities attached to Krishna also becomes Atmaram. But Krishna's Atmaram, he's satisfied within himself, he doesn't need anything. Therefore, the queens could not satisfy the Lord by their feminine attractiveness, but they satisfied him by their sincere affection and service, italicized. They satisfied him by their sincere affection and service. That means, my dear devotees, we have the same opportunity. We just have to come to the platform of sincere affection and service. It's not our beauty, it's not our knowledge, it's not our wealth, it's not our birth, it's not our renunciation. It's our sincere affection and service. And when that is in place, Krishna reciprocates. Only by unalloyed transcendental loving service could they satisfy the Lord. And the Lord was pleased to treat them as wives in reciprocation. They wanted to serve him in that capacity. He permitted them to serve him in that capacity. But he was not attracted by their feminine charms, their beauty, their bodily structures, and whatever else men are attracted to women by. And then from their side, the grave dealings which the queens displayed in natural feminine ways were also transcendental. But Krishna was transcendental, and it's being repeated as a theme. They were also fully transcendental. The ways in which they were expressing their sincere affection and service for the Lord was in a particular rasa, but it wasn't through the filter of lust or driven by lust. It was an appropriate expression of love in madhurya rasa. And so they didn't immediately run and go and embrace Krishna. They were checked by their feminine shyness and so on and so on and so on and so on and so on. They were on the transcendental platform. How does one come to that position? By sincere affection and service. And cultivate like that. And by cultivating like that, it gives one spiritual strength to check this mundane, compelling urge. Here's Prabhupada's humor. It's one sense it's humorous, in another sense it's sad, but Cupid, going back to Cupid being attracted, Cupid throws his arrows upon the living being to make them mad after the opposite sex, whether the party is actually beautiful or not. Cupid's provocations are going on even amongst the beastly societies, who are all ugly looking in the estimation of the civilized nations. Have you ever looked through a National Geographic magazine? You know, they have pictures of spiders and sea animals and insects and, you know, they're really weird looking things. But guess what? You know, he's attracted to her and she's attracted to him. And we look at that and go, but you know, they look at it and go, go for it. What is it? It's the arrow of Cupid. It makes the world go round and around and perpetually. Propagation of the species is driven by that one principle. And it's needed, yes? I mean, for continuing samsara, you have to have, you know, some reason, impetus to go after it. So that's the impetus. It's the number one attraction in the material world. Even ugly. So this nice example of Cupid, he was surrounded by, you know, the beauties of the heavenly realm. And Prabhupada has described the beauties of the heavenly realm is thousands and thousands of times more beautiful than any beauty found here, whatever that is. So the standard there is, you know, this is nothing. That's something. The beauty of the goddesses of fortune is millions and millions of times greater. Kamadev dropped his bow. He was defeated by their beauty. Krishna has not one fig of attraction for such feminine charm. But he is attracted by their devotion. That same position is eligible to us, depending upon sincere affection and service. We're being given the opportunity by the process of devotional service to become attached to Krishna. In fact, he's manifesting himself in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, as we discussed earlier. Where Vyasadeva is taking us is not only from Hastinapur to Dwarka, through the streets of Dwarka being received by everybody, and into the city of Dwarka, and into the palaces, and into the hearts of the queens. But he's also disclosing then this same eligibility is there for us, that we can become fully attracted to Krishna, and not with the mistaken idea, as the mundane personalities and speculators have it, this is some kind of mundane affair. How does this become possible? To receive it properly? All this is possible only by the association of devotees of the Lord who are called the Mahatmas. So how much valuable it is that we have the association of devotees. Such a resource, such a treasure that we've been given, the association of devotees. And we can make a similar mistake and see devotees in a mundane way, instead of seeing in a transcendental way. And we can make offenses to those devotees and destroy our progress in the path of devotional service. But we can avoid those offenses against the devotees and see the resource, the transcendental attraction, or trying to become attracted, that those devotees have towards Krishna. Regularly taking part in the activities that can attract one to Krishna. Such a valuable resource. And ultimately those that can, by their own example and by their words, disclose the real attraction to Krishna. Get on board. That's our process. We'll try to end with this next verse. So the Leela has been explained several verses in a row. Now comes the Siddhanta, or the philosophical conclusion. The common materialistic conditioned souls speculate on the Lord that he is one of them. Out of their ignorance, they think that the Lord is affected by matter, although he is unattached. Prabhupada begins the purport. The word abhudaha mentioned herein is very significant. There's buddhi and there's abhudi. So ignorance, the absence of transcendental understanding, with that absence, and you don't get it without the association of Mahatmas, to get buddhi. Krishna gives it, but Krishna gives it when he sees here's a sincere soul. And they're really striving to come to me. And one of the indications they're striving to come to me is they take shelter of those who are advanced spiritual personalities. They genuinely take shelter. So, Prabhupada is saying in the purport, this is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads, and he paraphrases Natasya Karyam Karanam Chividyate Svabhavika Jnana Balakriyacha. His different potencies. Natasya Karyam Karanam Chividyate Natatsamas Chabyavikasya Drishyate. Parasya Shakti Vividaiva Shruyate Svabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriyacha. In natural sequence, the Lord manifests things through his Jnana Shakti, Bala Shakti, and Kriya Shakti. His potencies manifest things in the spiritual and in the material world. In natural sequence, doing everything just as a manifestation of his different potencies. While his potencies are acting, he remains independent. So the application is, Krishna has come, and he's manifesting things by his own potencies, including goddesses of fortune. And the goddesses of fortune have attraction and love for him. And it's all just an enactment of his potencies. And he's independent. He's not moved by sense attraction. Oh, look at these beauties. Now's my chance. No. When he comes, when he creates, it's by his own potency. When he comes, it's by his own potency. When he's interacting with his own potency, it's by his own potency. He's not controlled by anything. He's beyond the modes of material nature. He controls the material nature. Maya adyakshena prakriti. It's by his adyaksha. He does it by remote control. He doesn't even have to pull gears and levers and control things, like go to the office and make sure everybody's doing their job. Just adyaksha. Just by his all-knowing glance, everything happens effortlessly. There's no work that he has to do it, but it effortlessly happens because he wills it to happen. Such is the powerful glance of the Lord and the powerful will of the Lord. He remains aloof and independent. This is our scriptural understanding. Those that don't have this association with devotees, and they hear these descriptions, they twist it and turn it upside down, and so gross, their representation, they don't understand it at all. They take it as material, or at best, the impersonal Brahman is supreme, and Krishna's form is a covering of the impersonal Brahman, although there's no indication that Krishna has a covering. Krishna has no covering. But they take it like that, just by their twisting and turning of their mental processes. That conception itself, Prabhupada says, is a product of conditional life. Because they cannot go beyond their own personal limitation of capacity. They can't do those things, and so it must be something else. The way the Prabhupada says it again is, they accept one side of the picture while disbelieving the other. It's a neat way of saying it. So, abodha. their ignorance. They think Krishna's attracted, oh, just see. Why are you worshipping one who is so attracted? You've heard this before? I've heard it before. How can you worship one who is 16,000 wives? Why do you worship someone like that? Thinking, you know, he's a someone. Like a, you know, mundane person. So, it's nice as devotees to go on and, you know, not have to hear, you know, the smashing of the ignorance of the ignorant. And just appreciate the transcendental pastimes of Krishna. But that taint of ignorance may also be there within us. So our business is to let that history remove any taints of ignorance and repose our devotion, our sincere affection and service upon Krishna with a clear understanding of who he is. And that will elevate our own consciousness to the platform we can realize who we are. Like spirit soul. Like having nothing to do with the covering of this body and the urges of the body. Like we were discussing yesterday about whether Yamunacharya was actually, you know, his mind went to thoughts of sex and then he would spit on the thought. Or he was teaching by his example, this is what those of us who are in the conditioned stage might do. But that attraction is so base compared to the happiness of transcendental life. It has no place. No place at all. In our stage, in Vaidhi Sanada Bhakti, we follow regulations to regulate such tendencies in religious marriage. But practically speaking, the standard that we have for married life, when properly followed, it's sannyas. Prabhupada called it grahastha sannyas. You live with wife and brahmachari, although you live with wife, because the purpose of being with wife is not to, now I have a license to enjoy sense gratification. But that's not our Krishna conscious platform. The teaching that Prabhupada has given is very clearly not that. Very clearly not that. He would use the phrase grahastha brahmachari. Like it's, you know, left, right, or wet, dry. Or, you know, it's an opposite. For the materialist, family, married life means go for it. Restrain yourself until you're married and then go for it. And that's not Krishna consciousness. It's in a religious way you lead your life and assist one another to become perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness. And for the purpose of producing God-conscious children, to take a soul back to Krishna for that purpose of service only, then there's combination of male and female, and otherwise not. And it's not just bite the bullet. It's find happiness through the mood of humble service. Sincere affection and service unto Krishna. And what's the reward? Krishna will reciprocate and provide you with an eternal situation beyond this pushing-pulling. What's the price? Mamevaye prapadyante mayamitan tarantite. And if the answer is no, or maybe not so blunt, it's, I'm trying. Then it's, Daivihi Eshu Gunamai, Mamamaya Dharatyaya. Fortunately, the lesson is this. Krishna's form, as he's entering into Dwaraka, is fully transcendental. Krishna's name is not different than Krishna, and it's fully transcendental. This Srimad Bhagavatam is not different than Krishna, and it's fully transcendental. We have the same opportunity now, not like, you know, millions of lifetimes later, now, to associate directly with a Krishna in his deity form also, and through the medium of serving the devotees. Because the devotee is the conduit through which the mercy of Krishna is manifested. We have that opportunity right now. He's so merciful. He's giving himself to us. It's not just learning things and becoming smart and something. It's softening the heart and becoming situated in our relationship with Krishna. Sincere affection and service attracts Krishna. And when that attraction for Krishna, or say, the attraction by Krishna to us, we're protected. I want to be protected. This world is an unsafe place. It's very dangerous. In Bhaktisiddhanta's language, it's not a fit place for a gentleman or a gentle lady. I want protection. I want protection for all of you. The means of protection is being given. Take shelter through sincere affection and service unto Krishna. And he's giving himself, manifesting himself directly. As he's manifesting himself before the queens. He's manifesting himself before us. Same opportunity. We're not so spiritually evolved. Continue the process, the watering process of chanting, hearing, remembering, practicing to serve Krishna in a meaningful, very sincere manner. Carefully serve the devotees, avoid offenses against the devotees and against the holy name, and gradually that evolving of our loving attraction for Krishna will become stronger and stronger and stronger. That's our process. Hare Krishna. Any questions or discussion? Yes.
What is this? The cupid throwing the arrow. Is it a figurative thing or is it something which is...
I don't think it's figurative. Got a bow and arrows. He's busy. Demigods what?
Dhenukasura
and Palambasura. Okay. Okay. Yeah. This is a very intricate question. Could you say it slower and clearer? I got, you know, they represent the mode of ignorance and passion, so don't have to say that part again. We're influenced by the modes of nature. If we're able to access the holy name, well, not just to the mode of goodness, to Krishna. Okay? The spiritual master removes these lower modes. One of the things, it's not, he's a janitor or something. You have that word? You know, comes in and cleans up our messes. That's not the program. He gives strength. And it's something that we must attend to through the strength that's given. He lifts us up, gives us the strength, but it's something that we have to attend to. It's not, there's no complacency permitted in being effective to overcome the lower modes of nature. Does that address your question? Okay. Yes. When we hear Prabhupada's purport,
when we satisfying the heart, when we study these things, that type of understanding and realization don't come. So, what is the step is how to study?
I don't get it. When we read Prabhupada's purport, it's very nice. But? When we hear it from your spiritual master, it's very satisfying. But when we read it on our own, we don't get the same satisfaction. That's what you're saying? The same deep meaning we don't get when we read alone. You mean you need a spiritual master? Well, golly gee whiz. Okay, surrender to the spiritual master. I guess that's the program. Is that all right? You're commenting more than asking a question. Yeah? Okay. So there, one of the ways in which Srila Prabhupada and his Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, effectively spread Krishna consciousness was through the use of the printing press, and then in turn with Prabhupada specifically recorded audio recordings, video recordings through technology. So while here it's nice, as you say, and then not here, there's recordings. You can study literally, I mean explicitly. One of the reasons why I'm doing this, systematically covering first and second canto, is precisely for this reason. Devotees can study and go and hear the recordings. And then a very nice thing is you discuss in the company of others. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be discussed in the company of others, of sincere, like-minded souls. That's It's meant to be read, but more, it's meant to be discussed. It's like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's example of the jar of honey. And we can be the bee that's licking on the jar of honey. Or we can enter into the jar of honey and taste the honey. So the tasting of the topics of the Bhagavatam comes out through the discussion of the topics of Bhagavatam. Or it's like seeing a jar of glubjiments and then biting into one. And the juice goes all over the place because it's packaged very nicely. The juice is inside. But you bite and the juice comes out. So the discussing of the topics of the Bhagavatam is like that. The juice that's inside comes out by discussing. So while I'm here, I'm consciously thinking of persons that are elsewhere. And when I'm elsewhere, I'm consciously thinking of the persons here and elsewhere. That this is a service that I'm rendering unto all of you. And whether you take advantage of that service that I'm rendering unto all of you or not, that's up to all of you. And, you know, the directions that you're being given and how to cultivate your Krishna consciousness in a practical way, because there's other things that you're also hearing and, you know, augmenting your reading with. But I'm trying to provide this as a resource. And it will endure beyond today and tomorrow. It'll endure for a long time. Yes.
Kolavecha Sridhar, coming to the position of complete satisfaction.
You like Kolavecha Sridhar? You like him? Yeah. Okay. Did you get it?
How would he come to that position?
Oh, you like, you know, how to come to absolute humility question again? Same as yesterday? How did he become Kolavecha Sridhar is another way of asking the same question. I recommend you like absolute humility. A way to develop such a quality is you find such personalities as Kolavecha Sridhar, as Raghunath Das Goswami, as Haridas Thakur, and you become like, you know, a fan, an ardent fan, like, you know, follower, appreciator. Read about them, glorify them, remember them, hear more and more and more about them, become absorbed in their quality, and that will become your quality. And then it's not just to whatever degree there's some material attraction, that material attraction will be dissolved and all that will be left is spiritual attraction, because these personalities are on the platform of absolute humility. They're real, they have the real thing. And their personalities are quite different. How the Lord reciprocates with them is very different. They're rasa, their relationship with the Lord is very different. So then you can get, you know, different flavors of absolute humility. But absolute humility, it's a nice project. Cultivate absolute humility. You cultivate one thing that's genuine, you got the whole thing. The whole thing. Genuine. So go for the genuine thing, the real thing. Humility is a great place to start. But humility is expressed through service. Don't forget that. Humility is not just like withdrawing from the realm of service and being humble. Real humility is full service. Without being influenced by the modes of nature, only remaining in this mood of real humility, absolute humility, serving and serving and serving and serving and serving and serving and absolute humility. And it's so satisfying. Nothing can pull you away from that. When Haridas Thakur was told in Puliya, we're going to be visiting Puliya, he was told by the Qazi, Haridas, why are you bringing this problem upon yourself? You're born in a very elevated Muslim family, but you're taking up these Hindu practices. So I'm the Muslim ruler here. I'm going to have to punish you. Do yourself a favor. Just, you know, say the Islamic prayers and give up this chanting of Krishna, the Hindu god. Do yourself a favor, and then I won't have to punish you. Unflinching, Haridas Thakur said, if you believe that I should be punished, then punish me. You're the Qazi. You have that power. You're the representative of God. So it's your right. You punish me as you see fit. But I can tell you one thing. If the punishment is you cut my body into little pieces, I still will not be able to stop chanting the name of Krishna. It's coming from the soul. It's not coming from the body, Muslim or Hindu. It's coming from the soul. I can't stop. Nor will you be able to stop me by dismantling this body into little pieces. He didn't say it out of anger. He was just describing the reality. He wasn't afraid. By speaking like that, the Qazi might get, oh, you're finished. Why are you talking back? He spoke absolutely, because he's on that absolute platform. He made a suggestion. He said, how about this? Whatever the punishment that's appropriate for a Hindu becoming a Muslim, then why don't you give me the same punishment for a Muslim that's become, as you considered, a Hindu? That would be fair. But whatever you want to do, I accept it. Absolute humility. And he didn't stop serving the Lord, and that was his service, chanting the holy name. Even when he was so old, he couldn't complete his chanting. His body was infirm. He was unable to complete his chanting. So when Mahaprabhu came and brought him Mahaprasad of Jagannath, he said, no, I can't eat until I've completed my chanting. And Lord Chaitanya said, but it's Mahaprasad. How can you say no? Oh, okay. I'll take a little Mahaprasad. That's it. Sanatan Goswami, that our scriptures are filled with such examples. Sanatan Goswami was in his late 60s, and his body was, you know, not capable. But still, he would, because he made a vow, he would circumambulate Govardhan Hill every day. The Lord came before him and said, Sanatan Goswami, you don't have to do this. He said, I have to do this. I've taken a vow. How can I not complete my vow? I've taken a vow. I have to do this. So the Lord said, very well, I'll manifest he took a Govardhan Shila, put his foot in the Govardhan Shila. This is my footprint. You just circumambulate this some number of times, 7 times. Nice big Shila. And you can, that way you can complete your vrata. That's absolute humility. You know, I'm not qualified to be on the spontaneous platform where I don't have to observe rules and regulations. He was thinking himself not qualified like that. I must. I'm on the Vidhi Sadhana Bhakti platform. He was on the Prema Bhakti platform. Krishna directly came, manifested his foot in that Shila, and he continued till the day he left his body, completing his vrata. And so on and so on. The scriptures, particularly Gaura Lila, is filled with that. Filled with that. Like radical. So, you know, we can't imitate. It would be an offense to imitate. So we don't imitate. But we admire. We revere. Show great, 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 great respect to those Vaishnavas who have such quality. And in us, that quality will grow. It's a very important lesson in developing qualities. There's other items, but that's one. Ramanujacharya discusses this in his writings. But it's effective. In a simple Sangat Sanjayate Kama, Bhagavad Gita phrase. By association, we develop qualities like those with whom we associate. So those persons who have absolute humility, associate with them in that way. Hearing about them, remembering them, describing them, sharing with others your heartfelt appreciation for the qualities of these exalted devotees. And go on practically serving in that mood. Naturally, that quality will become your own. That's how one becomes of the quality like Kolavichar Sridhar. That's through sadhana, siddhi. And when that platform of siddhi is there, then all perfection is there. Vasudev Dutt is another. I mean, you know, read Gaura Lila. It's filled with just this totally disarming, charming, and totally disarming manifestation of extreme, pure humility. So many examples. My mind is thinking of so many examples. You're inspired like that, then catch hold of the feet of these great personalities. Pray to them that this quality that they have can manifest in your heart. Yes.
Krishna is within the instructions that we receive from our scriptures and our teachers, yes? That's your point? Scripture is with, Krishna is within those instructions.
This is within the bearing and application of the
Krishna. This is saying the same thing. Okay.
This is the sincere affection and service that you mentioned.
Yeah.
The access to that through the instructions and the service.
Yes. That's the binding of the glove to me. Okay? You like glove to me?
Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.